Welcome to another PI World podcast. This is an audio-only version offered as another way to enjoy our great content. A full video version can be seen on piworld.co.uk, where you can find many more videos of interest to investors.
Thank you all for participating in this morning's call on our interim results for Next Energy Solar Fund. We're pleased to present another very strong set of results. And as we look forward beyond the historical numbers, we're looking at a very positive outlook for the company going forward. We'll run through a number of pages for you this morning. You can see from the table of contents a lot of things to touch upon. Before launching into Next Energy Solar Fund, just a very brief reminder on Next Energy Capital. As most of you know, we are a solar-focused company active across the solar value chain and across geographies. Just to note, we have over 200 members in the team. To date, we have invested in roughly 325 individual utility-scale solar assets across geographies. We have managed and/or monitored in excess of 1,300 utility-scale solar assets. And we are particularly active in the development of green and brownfield solar assets across geographies. The benefits of that expertise, of course, come to each of the funds we manage. Next Energy Solar Fund is our flagship investment vehicle, and that is one of three funds that we have launched. We are about to launch a fourth vehicle focused on the unsubsidized, unlevered solar opportunity in the UK. So as you can see, we are a very experienced operator in the solar sector. And as I was saying, all of the expertise, experience, skills built up over the last 15 years come to the benefit of our flagship fund, NESF. NESF, a brief overview, nearly 900 megawatts of capacity at the 30th of September 2021, a well-diversified asset base in the UK. We have eight assets in Italy, acquired roughly 2017, and with our new exposure to NextPower 3, the private vehicle, we now have asset exposure in other attractive geographies such as the US, Chile, Spain, Portugal, Poland, and India. As we go into the interim financial highlights, I think the main thing to note, of course, is the increase in the NAV per ordinary share from 98.9 at March or 98.7 in June to 103.1 at 30th of September. As you may have seen from our presentation and the interim already published, that increase and improvement comes mainly from the increase in the short-term power prices that we are using, that we have either locked in already or our market consultants are forecasting for the period after our lock-ins expire. And of course, also the inflation environment has led to a significant increase in the NAV per share. Also of note on this page, you can see that our cash dividend is at 1.0 for the period under review. That coverage, which is slightly down from the previous period, has been driven by a number of factors. The lower power prices at the beginning of the period, the unexpected level of distribution network operator outages, and some other minor factors have impacted that. As we look forward to the rest of this year, we are looking at a dividend cover of roughly 1.1 times for the year. And even more attractive and even more of note, as we look into next year, based on the power prices that we have already locked in, which gives us a high degree of confidence, we are looking at a dividend cover for the next financial year and the one thereafter, around 1.3 times. And that includes, of course, an increase in the expected dividend in line with our progressive dividend policy. So a very significant increase expected in terms of dividend cover. The other items on this page, largely unchanged from the previous period in terms of the leverage. The dividend, as you know, is a target for this year, 7.16p. Based on the share price of this morning, that's roughly a 7.2% dividend yield. So a very attractive return projection for shareholders based on the current share price and our current dividend target with the underlying operational and financial results. As I take you to the next page, you can see that this period we have continued to generate more electricity than our acquisition budgets. And if you look at over the last 7 years since our IPO, that consistent outperformance of energy generation becomes sustainable and demonstrates the value of our expertise and our specialism in solar to the investors in the fund as we continue to generate more electricity than our budgets, mitigate risks, manage assets, and as you can see from the bottom part of this page, deliver very attractive, broader outcomes for investors. Over the period, some of the highlights, we've added 5 high-quality solar assets to the portfolio. We have established a 100 million sterling partnership with a specialist in energy storage and already closed the first acquisition under that partnership. And of course, we have made a commitment of $50 million to NextPower 3, which, as you all know, is a specialist private solar energy fund launched and managed by Next Energy Capital, focused on solar in OECD markets. If I take you to the next page, you can see the point I just made where, again, for the period, we have an outperformance of generation of above 1%, even in an environment where we had significant unexpected outages driven by the work of the distribution network operators as they picked up activities that they had not been able to perform during the previous COVID-impacted year of activity on their side. So even in the face of very challenging operational environment, Next Energy Solar Fund is able to demonstrate that outperformance. And I think you can comfortably consider that to now be demonstrably sustainable, also looking forward. Over to you, Ross.
Thanks, Mike, and morning, everybody. So it's been a really exciting period for NESF. We've been taking a lot of action to prepare the platform for what we see as its next wave of growth. So as a quick reminder, alongside the focus on UK utility solar, we also have 15% of GAV for private solar funds, 30% of GAV for international solar assets, and 10% of GAV into energy storage technologies. As Mike has mentioned already, we've been taking great strides towards deploying these additional areas of mandate and bringing interesting diversification into the portfolio. We've, through this period, signed a joint venture with Eel Power. That's a £100 million target through that joint venture for the deployment of standalone battery storage technology in the UK. We've also acquired the maiden investment, a 50 megawatt peak standalone battery, which is interestingly located in a particularly grid congested area of Scotland. We expect to see in the future additional interesting assets being deployed through that joint venture and into the energy storage sector. Alongside that, we also energized the second of 2 assets in a portfolio that energize the AB InBev, so world's largest brewer, on a 15-year bilateral contract for the sale of the power from those assets. So that's the second one of those coming online. And that's an interesting area of growth again for Next Energy Solar Fund in the future. We also committed $50 million to NextPower 3, which is an international solar fund, particularly interesting investment for NESF, because that fund has an existing portfolio of already constructed and in construction assets and continues to grow fast in OECD jurisdictions. Particularly interesting investment also for NESF because it also opens up co-investment opportunities alongside that platform where NESF can take direct stakes into international assets as well.
Thank you, Ross. Going on to the next page, in terms of the NAV bridge, the main highlights taking us from 98.9 to 103.1 P per share is, of course, the income from investments, as well as the change in the fair value of our portfolio, which I can show you in more detail on the next page. So you can see in terms of the portfolio valuation, the main determinants of that increase in the net asset value are driven by the change in the power price forecast. And we'll show you in just a couple of slides more in detail how that really is all concentrated on the early part of the curve as our consultants have reduced slightly the long end of the curve. The change in inflation, of course, has had a significant positive impact on our forecast revenues and therefore on the net asset value per share. And then interestingly enough, we have positive news from the investment in NextPower 3, where we have already recorded a smallish revaluation of that investment into NextPower 3. And we, of course, are expecting to see further increases in the net asset value of that investment as that portfolio moves from assets in operation, assets under development, assets in construction, to a portfolio of fully constructed and operating solar assets across markets. As a word of interest, as a note of interest, Next Energy Solar Fund's percentage stake in NextPower 3 is less than 10%. And so that is a small participation from NextPower 3's perspective by NESF in that fund, a very successful fund in terms of raising further capital and deploying that capital across markets. Ross, over to you.
Thanks, Mike. So I'll step through these quickly. We've held firm with our unlevered discount rate at 5.75. We do see continued pressure on discount rates in a very competitive market for subsidized solar assets. So we've included a sensitivity here to demonstrate the impact on the overall portfolio. Alongside that, it's clear from the way that we value the portfolio, we are reliant on long-term power price forecasts within our valuation process. We work with the leading industry advisors. But if you look, for example, at the recent power price spike that's been well publicized, that clearly wasn't captured in earlier versions of the curve. So we thought helpful to include a sensitivity here to allow investors to make their own mind up around how those curves could evolve over time and the impact, again, that can have on NAV. Portfolio generation, as Mike has said, has been very consistent year on year from the Next Energy Solar Fund platform. Particularly pleased with how stable the underlying asset base is. But again, worth including a sensitivity around how energy generation from that platform can fluctuate relative to NAV as well. From an inflation perspective, again, we've seen positive trends towards higher inflation from HMT and longer term messaging from Bank of England as well. And again, we've included a sensitivity here to demonstrate the impact that can have on NAV. I believe as part of this, you know, there's lots of reasons to be positive in looking at this kind of bag of additional sensitivities, especially around power price, where we see increased electrification of heat and of adoption of electric vehicles driving different demand curves than devices are currently building into their long-term assumptions. So useful to be able to look at these in parallel with the existing portfolio results. NESF really does have an optimized capital structure. We have 190 million of debt, and we have included within that 283 of outstanding financial commitments, also 14 million of look-through debt as part of that investment into NextPower 3. One of the key components of our balance sheet, of course, is the preference shares, really resilient to any downside power price environment because they have that fixed dividend of 4.75 over the long term as well. Key takeaway from this slide is the 86 million that we still have from available from RCFs, which gives us a significant amount of firepower for those future growth ambitions that we've spoken to already in the presentation. Touching again on a couple of points that Mike has raised, in the current period, we obviously are covered from a dividend perspective. The year-on-year profile shows that we have achieved dividend target year upon year for the last 7 years. We're on track to achieve that dividend target of 7.16 pence. And interestingly, as we move into the future, we see dividend cover strengthening, and out to 2023, we're achieving a 1.3 times cover. Looking at forecast power prices, much to be happy in the front end of these curves, as you can see. So significant uplift in power price relative to what we've seen in previous forecasts in the period out to 2025, with the tail now softening ever so slightly relative to the last forecasts, as advisors now have a better grip on the likely deployment of renewables out to 2050, with more clarity coming from the government in their STEPS plan to achieve net zero. Reminder that the way that we calculate our NAV is where we have real power price hedges in place, we use those within our NAV calculations. In the short term, where those hedges are not in place, we use the short-term market forwards. And then, as I've said already, we defer to a rolling average blend of three of the leading market consultants for their long-term view. We use the rolling average blend of three because it reduces any volatility in the NAV brought about by one advisor changing any assumptions in their assumption set. So real stability in that long-term curve. One of the key takeaways, again, from this session is how we are protecting future cash flows. So as a reminder, more than 60% of the revenue from NESF's books comes from ROCs and feed-in tariffs and long-term corporate PPAs. So when we talk about the power price and how we manage the power price, we really are looking at just that top kind of 40% of the revenue stack. And what we've demonstrated in this slide here is how we have secured the price point for the power generation in those coming years. So as you can see, in the 21-22 period, we are all but 100% certain around the power price point that we're going to achieve for the power that is going to be generated. When we look out to 2022-23 and 23-24, again, you can see that a significant proportion of that power is already hedged. Now, when we add the 75% to that existing 60% of revenue that is captured by the ROCs and the FITs, that means that around 85 to 90% of the overall revenue of NESF is already well understood, certain, and locked. And therefore, that gives real comfort to that messaging that we are giving around the strengthening and robustness of the dividend cover into the future. How we secure those power prices is by taking hedges against clips of power. So in the liquid market, we have an energy sales desk that are constantly looking at how the market price is evolving, and they're taking those clips of power and securing price against them into the future liquid market, which runs 3 to 4 years out. We've obviously taken advantage of recent volatility to increase hedges out into the 22-23 and 23-24 period to ensure, again, that we have that strengthening of divvy cover. I think the final takeaway from this slide for me is that it shows, again, that power sales methodology that we deploy for NESF is extremely robust and fit for purpose. So as we saw through the beginning period of COVID, a kind of one in 100 year event where there was a significant change in demand that impacted power price, we were fully hedged through that period. And in fact, we generated more than 5 million of additional revenue relative to forecasts throughout that period. Now what we're able to do as power pricing has spiked is increase our hedging into that future market whilst taking advantage of some of that upside as well. So we're able to capture the upside of the market to a degree whilst mitigating the downside and layering that across the existing bedrock of those subsidies that we have in the platform, which should provide a significant degree of comfort to investors around the way in which the platform generates revenue. A quick word around ESG. Obviously, NESF maintains its strong ESG credentials. We've powered nearly 300,000 homes from this period. And as a reminder, NESF and the Next Energy Capital team continue to contribute to the Next Energy Foundation. There's a slide in the appendix that gives more detail here. But the Next Energy Foundation provides real social impact support to projects throughout the world that are of real need and create significant value from that investment as well. So we not only clearly tick the environmental boxes through the work that we do, both through generating green energy and in the biodiversity work that we do, but we also support the local communities in which we operate and on a wider scale through that foundation, society as a whole. We also achieve compliance with the EU SFDR, and this really shows the Next Energy mantra around continuing to drive for clarity and transparency throughout all of our operations. A quick word about the future. So as I've said already, you know, we've had a really exciting period to date. I'm super excited about where NESF is at the moment and how it is placed for growth. We have a significant pipeline of more than 300 million, which is set to help us deploy into those existing mandate areas that I've spoken to already. So, you know, increasing growth in the UK, interesting growth around battery storage, interesting diversification internationally from a solar perspective, and continued growth through those private equity structures as well. Beyond that, we continue to enhance divvy cover. So as I've said already, we're driving forward that power sales strategy and increasing hedges out into the future, which gives us certainty of that revenue stream. We continue also alongside that to drive asset performance. So an extremely diverse already with nearly 100 assets of a portfolio. So extremely diverse geographically, extremely robust, consistently delivering generation expectations, and with exceptional opportunity for growth in the future. NESF really is an exciting opportunity at the moment. And Mike, I'll pass back to you to wrap things up.
Thanks, Ross. Before we open the floor for a Q&A, just a summary. The way we view the situation of NESF today is a very large, diversified, de-risked operating asset portfolio, which has demonstrably now outperformed expectations, we believe, in a sustainable way going forward. And as we then think about the growth in the asset base, where that is coming from, we, as Ross said, have very exciting growth opportunities in the UK, outside the UK, in a solar sector, and also battery storage sector that is expected to continue growing incrementally into the future. So we're particularly well placed to take advantage of those further growth opportunities, using the strength of our balance sheet, using all of the skills that we built up as a specialist in this sector to deliver very attractive investor returns going forward. And with that, I'll open it for Q&A, please.
We've got a question from Adam Forsyth at Longspur.
Morning, Ross. Morning, Michael. Two questions, if I may. Firstly, on the DNO outages, clearly this seems a one-off effect, but I wonder if we're likely to see any impact in the second half or even further out. You know, is it something that's over? And whilst these are happening, I just wonder, do you get enough notice on these to schedule your own maintenance? Is there any kind of mitigating effect whilst these are going on? My other price, this is maybe listening too closely to Ross, maybe putting too much thought into it, but Ross used the phrase storage technologies in the plural. And I just wonder if you'd had any consideration of particularly long duration storage projects, either float batteries or I think there's three pump storage projects on the cards at the moment in the UK. Just wondering if you'd given any thought to those. Thanks.
Ross.
Should I dive in? Yeah. So from a DNO perspective, so we do see this year as an outlying year. So we've seen that DNOs deferred the majority of their work from the COVID period into the current financial year. We have some well understood additional DNO outages through the rest of the year. But what we're expecting for the following financial year is things to trend back towards the norm. So more like a 2019 year, that we don't expect this to be a continued trend as we've seen in this year. We do get a degree of notification. We also can work quite closely with the DNO, so we're often able to reduce the impact. So we're able to reduce a complete curtailment to a half-site curtailment, for example, or we're able to condense the period in which that outage happens. And of course, we do complete as much maintenance as we can during any outage period. So all our high voltage maintenance is conducted during those periods of outage as well. So we have again mitigated additional outage through kind of co-working in that regard as well. From a storage perspective, we really are focused at the moment on shorter duration technology. We see a significant opportunity there. Two work streams really live for us at the moment. So the standalone work that we're doing through the joint venture, we're also looking at the existing asset base and how over time we might realize co-location with those existing physical assets and the export contracts that are already in place. We're always looking at the long duration market. I do believe over time we will see interesting opportunity to bring some of that technology into the portfolio, which is why I do talk more generically around energy storage. As always, picking the time and the right technology and components is key for NESF, and today is not necessarily the right opportunity for that. But in the future, absolutely, we will hope to deploy some longer duration technology.
Great. Thanks very much. Very clear.
And we'll go to Paul Chabran from Kempen.
Yeah, good morning, everyone. I had a couple of questions. First, on your battery storage project in FIF. I think last time you mentioned that the remuneration profile for such assets is much more complicated than let's say a solar PV project. But do you have today maybe a clearer view on what you would expect the recurring income for such an asset to be? That would be extremely helpful. And on the other kind of investment that you've made on NP3, could you share any outlook on where the fund is going in terms of size, in terms of technologies, in terms of location? That would be also helpful. And last but not least, any comment that you'd like to share on the rumors that NextEnergy would be looking to sell Italian assets? And would that include potentially NESF assets in Italy as well? Thank you.
So obviously the revenue generation profile of the batteries we've included within the portfolio and expect to include is well understood. We did mention previously that the way in which batteries generate their revenue stack is more complex than solar. It also requires evolution over time. So it's a combination of arbitrage. So obviously buying low, selling high in that volatile power market, and also providing grid services across a number of different measures to support stability within the grid. And we see over time a number of different products that we can use to monetize as part of that revenue stack for batteries. Without going into too much detail, which isn't appropriate, you know, we do see a premium relative to solar for batteries, and we expect to deliver attractive returns from the batteries that we include in the profile. And again, that is supporting our continued growth ambitions and supporting strengthening the divvy cover. I think the final thing to mention as well is the way in which those batteries generate their revenue is kind of counter-cyclical with the way that solar generates its revenue. So on an overall portfolio basis, it brings another layer of robustness and diversification to the overall revenue profile of the group as well. So it's certainly a really interesting and an exciting area for us to deploy capital for NESF. Back to you, Mike.
So on Nexpower 3, as a reminder, Nexpower 3 is a 10-year private infrastructure vehicle focused only on solar assets across mainly OECD countries. I say mainly because we have a small exposure to India, and that will remain the only non-OECD exposure. The fund size today is roughly $530 million. And that includes, of course, the commitment by NESF of $50 million. The target size of the fund is $750 million. The end of the fundraising period is the 31st of December of this year. And so you should expect to see further capital raises taking place for that vehicle as we go towards the end of the year. Interestingly, that fund, given our exposure, our experience, our access to opportunities, is targeting gross IRRs for its investors of between 13 and 15%. That's 13 to 15%, 13 to 15% gross IRRs for investors. To secure the pipeline and an existing portfolio of about 530 megawatts, the investment team at Nexpower 3 has looked at over 35 gigawatts of investment opportunities. So we have a very, very precise, detailed ability to look through and select from a large portfolio the most attractive solar assets. Regarding Italy, it is indeed the case that we are selling Nexpower 2, which is our previous private fund in Italy, focused on Italy. It has roughly 106 individual utility scale assets in that country. We are in the final stages of selling that portfolio. We are expecting to see the result of that sale demonstrate again why a investment in the private infrastructure market is particularly attractive for investors. However, that sale is completely unconnected to Next Energy Solar Fund's Solis portfolio. The Solis portfolio is not being sold, and we do not expect it to be sold anytime in the future.
That's very helpful. Thank you.
And we'll go to Ian Scala from Stifel.
Yeah, good morning. It's Ian Stewart from Stifel. I've got a couple of questions. Firstly, the chart on page 15, which shows the fixes of the hedges. Am I correct, just looking at these orange dots, that there was basically no hedging between April and it looks like the start of September? And then the second question is just on long-term power prices. I saw a statement in there somewhere. As of 30th September, estimates implied an average rate of decline of UK electricity prices 2021 to 2041 of approximately negative 1.4% in real terms. And then the long-term inflation rate seems to have been cut to 2.5% from 3%. If you can just sort of give us a bit of color on that. I assume the decline reflects the fact we're coming off a starting higher power price than we have in the past.
Correct in relation to the placing of hedging. So we, as I've said, have an energy sales desk that focus on what is happening in the power market on a day-to-day basis, so they are opportunistically placing hedges as power price moves up the way. Clearly, they were looking at the power price trends throughout this period and were rolling hedges forward as and when power pricing allowed them to do so at a significant premium. We clearly have, as we've shown, now driven hedges forward significantly across that 21 and 22, 23 period and out as far as 24, 25 as well. In relation to power price, yes, I think the the assertion is correct. So the longer term decline obviously comes off that peak that wasn't there in the front end. So you see that significant spike between 21 and 25 that was not in previous curves. We do then see a slight softening relative to the most recent forecasts out to 2050 as well. And as I said before, that's really a change to the renewables blend out to 2050, which advisors have done following more understanding of the government's transition plan to net zero in 2050.
And on the long-term inflation rate, Ian, you're right, we have reduced it from 3% to 2.5%, driven by market information, market developments, in particular, of course, the long-term inflation estimates by the Bank of England, and of course, also the sector-wide inflation rates used. And we've had detailed conversations with the auditors of the fund, and then naturally the board that then signs off on the net asset value. And it was considered to be more appropriate to reduce that from that long-term inflation rate from 3 to 2.5%.
Thank you very much.
And just a further question on the inflation. How will inflation affect the fund's assets?
Sure. So the way we see inflation impacting the performance of the fund is through a positive leverage effect, which means as inflation increases, on the one hand, we have those revenues that are inflation linked, in particular the ROCs, of course, increasing with whatever the published RPI and then CPI will be in the future. So we have a positive leverage effect. On the other hand, on the cost side, given that our OPEX within the vehicle is about 20% of revenues, you can see that even if all of those costs increase at the same level of inflation, we have revenues that are roughly 60% growing with inflation, but costs that are only 20% of revenues growing with inflation, so we have that positive leverage. The other part, or the impact of inflation on the market power price, we believe that in a high inflation environment, naturally you would see increasing power prices because they are closely connected. So if inflation is high, we would expect the market price of power to also increase. And so you could even say that 100% of our revenues are somehow linked to inflation. And of course, of revenues, we have roughly 20% costs, and therefore only 20% of the revenues have a cost inflation linkage. So that's why, summarizing, we see a strong positive leverage effect in a high inflation environment for the fund, naturally for its financial performance going forward.
Many thanks. And that's the end of questions. Michael, do you have any closing remarks?
Just to say thank you, everyone, for participating this morning. Naturally, you can reach out for any further questions or comments as they arise from a more detailed review of this morning's presentation or the interims. And again, thank you for your attention this morning, and we'll let you get back to your day job.
PI World videos and podcasts are for general information and interest. They do not constitute any kind of recommendation or inducement to buy shares of any company. PI World is not offering any kind of financial advice, and nothing in our material should be taken as such.